We are J-less today. Jay is off on his daytime job.
his real job?
Yes.
His real job.
The one that pays him money. Wheelbarrows.
Wait, we're not getting paid for this?
No.
No. Just you can have bragging rights.
That's right.
Yeah, please.
So filling in for Jay.
Wait a minute.
minus the awesome mustache is MDev.
You don't know that. You haven't seen him lately.
You know what? I definitely do not have an awesome mustache because I started to grow a mustache. Uh-huh. And my wife is out of town this week. And when we FaceTimed, the first thing she said was, "What is that on your face? Please get rid of that before I come back."
Whoops.
That came
so
out.
So what do men do when their wives are away?
Well,
grow mustaches and.
Well, okay. So my plan while the wife was away was to, you know, I was going to go and I was going to buy a family pack of like ribeye steaks.
Ooh,
and I was going to sous vide them all on my day off and then just grill up one every night, you know, for dinner.
Could you get sick of steak?
No,
I haven't yet.
I mean, okay.
I suppose it could be possible, but I don't know. I'm willing to try. But I instead had to make sort of a emergency trip down to my parents and was down there for 4 days. So it was still good. I ate great, but I did not have the unstructured freedom that I originally expected.
Well, I really think that if you waited until your wife got back to do the sous vide ribeye every night, I think she probably would be into that.
She definitely is, because as long as steak is gluten free, she does not complain.
Oh, she's a gluten free person too?
She is. She, I think, probably a lot like you. She's never been tested. She just feels better not eating it.
Yeah,
but she also she's not a. I mean, like, if we're going out for Chinese food, she's like, right. Screw it. I'm going to eat what I want, you know, so.
Oh, see, I just can't do that.
Yeah, so.
It's like, I can't. Let's just put it that way. But, yeah, the thing with the gluten-free thing is that you have to get tested to see if there's something wrong with you. You have to, like, eat a gluten-heavy diet for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know. Not really willing to do that. So,
fair enough.
So what have you been up to? It's been ages since we talked to you.
Well,
ages since you've been on the show. I mean, Alan, how long has it been since we've been taking callers?
Well, it's been like 2 years.
2 years? And MDev basically had his own segment.
That's true.
You know, we at one point were considering having like your theme music. You know.
Well, I think at one point I promised to put together my own theme music, and then I got lazy and never did that. So,
what would have been your theme music?
Gosh, you know, I have no idea. I want to think it would have been something great, like what's that Ramblin' Man song, the old Ramblin'. But no, instead it, maybe something boring like.
Yakety sax?
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, that. Yeah, and that's open source, so we could have played it right in the recording.
Yakety sax is awesome. I think in all applications, it makes everything better.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sitting in my wife's office, which I'm not normally allowed in, but I am today because she's got the comfy office chair. And I'm pretty jealous of all the apparent office toys she has. I'm playing with a little Pop-O-Matic Trouble pen. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. I've been I'm playing with random gadgets that I find in my wife's office, and being on the scroll report.
Perfect.
So.
Well, we're happy to have you. It's been too
long. Yeah, we are.
And I'm happy to be here. So, even without Jay.
Well, you know, Jay's busy. He's got some thing in Dallas he had to go do.
I know. Isn't that only like a 4-hour drive from you? Why aren't you there?
Because I'd have to go to Dallas.
Oh, fair enough.
He'd have to leave his house.
Yeah.
Can't have that.
Well, I don't know. You know, I went to some NRA conventions, and after like the, God, I don't know, fourth or fifth one, they're all the same.
Have you been to that many?
And I think so. Phoenix, Charlotte,
Pittsburgh,
Houston.
Yeah.
There may be one other one in there somewhere. I don't know. But anyway,
they keep talking about redoing the Seattle Convention Center and making it like actually large enough to have real conventions. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see like the inaugural giant convention be NRA. Mostly,
how do you think that would go over in your area?
I think the city of Seattle might burn down. I can't say I'm wildly opposed to. But no, you know what? You know, Seattle, oh God, out here. I grew up in Oregon, and then I moved up to Washington, and I've always like I grew up living outside of Portland, and now I live outside of Seattle. And my thought is always like, I can't figure it out, because when you talk to people on the street, like everybody seems like reasonably logical and well put together.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get together in a group larger than six people, or it's election day, everybody gets really stupid. it's like groupthink. It is absolute groupthink.
Is there something in the coffee?
Definitely. No, there's, it's going to come out that, you know, all these Seattle coffee shops are a giant conglomerate poisoning us, and we're gonna go, oh, that makes sense.
That's how it works, right? Chemtrails.
Yeah.
Everybody's worried about fluoride in the water, but it's not the water.
Right. Nah, it's definitely the coffee.
That explains Starbucks.
Right, you know what? That's what we're talking about.
No, I mean, but that, you know.
Yeah, no, there's, and the weird thing is like, nobody in Seattle considers Starbucks good coffee. No, absolutely not. Like everybody has their own little artisan micro roastery that they like or whatever.
So cute.
No, it's great because like artisan coffee is as big as like micro beer is here.
Wow.
But the funny thing is, like, we all have our little secret coffee shop that we like, mm-hmm. but we all end up going to Starbucks, you know, six times a week because the artisan coffee shop involves 45 minutes of traffic or whatever, you know. So it's like, well, yeah, you know, I guess I would view it to bring it back to guns. It's like Starbucks is the Glock that you carry every day, but we all secretly have that Safe Queen 911 put away. Nobody makes coffee at home. That's really what it comes down to.
Really?
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
So,
I figured of all places, Seattle would be like the leader in home brew coffee technology.
Well,
no.
I want to know how this works.
Okay.
Like, nobody makes coffee at home, even on the weekends.
I mean, maybe.
I can see like stopping on your way to work during the week, you know, stop, get a cup of coffee. I can see that.
Yeah,
but like Sunday morning, and it's like 8:30 Sunday morning, and you got nothing to do, and you don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah, I mean, so I think actually maybe the one thing that's changed that is like, so all these little, you know, artisan roast coffee places. Mm-hmm. They all do sell like their coffee in like the Keurig K-cups.
Oh my God. You're kidding me.
So it might be one of those things like, you know, you have your little Keurig coffee, you know, from your favorite coffee place. But then, you know, going out for coffee is an event in and of itself. So
if you're going to go,
even if you're going to do something as like simple as, you know, you can go to Walmart or whatever. Right. It's like, okay, so we're going to go to Walmart. And if there's two or three people, like if teenagers are all going to go to Walmart or go to the mall together, you know, they'll meet at Starbucks and then they'll go to the mall. You know, it's like, it's like getting gas.
Yeah. And, you know, I noticed a little, maybe it's more as you go west. I don't know, but I noticed I have cousins in Arizona and they are like deeply immersed in the Starbucks culture.
Yeah. Well, my wife is back east right now with her grandmother, and my wife's grandmother's biggest concern or one of her biggest concerns was she believed that the East Coast did not have a mocha stand. So she bought a bunch of Starbucks, like powdered, ready to mix mocha, because nobody drinks coffee. We all drink like, you know, fancy stuff, right?
Oh, like the Frappuccino, venti.
Yeah, all of it.
Blah, blah.
Everybody's
got
nine adjectives. And, you know, it's like my regular coffee that I'll drink, like, if I'm buying.
Yeah, like, what's your order? Like, if you go to Starbucks, what's your order?
So my order, especially because it's sunny out right now and it's hot as hell and I had to turn my air conditioning on, would be a white chocolate caramel light Frappuccino.
What? Okay.
What is that?
What makes it light?
It's low calorie. It's like 200 calories instead of 480.
Oh, because they like use sugar-free something or another?
Yeah,
or?
Probably.
It's, I gotcha.
It somehow cost me, you know, $6 instead of $4.50. and it tastes like I'm drinking half as much.
So. Yeah, I was being fancy last week. I put almond milk in my coffee. I was like, ooh, almond milk.
And it's funny. We all, like my wife and I, we both pay for our Starbucks through the Starbucks app, and we collect the the bonus points and the stars and everything. And we have a little competition when we get our free drinks on who can make their coffee the most expensive and then get it for free. and she generally wins. She can get a cup of coffee up over $9 pretty easily.
No way.
Yeah. Wow.
What goes in a $9 cup of coffee? I have to know.
Either almond milk or coconut milk.
Oh, and yeah, then, the fancy milks.
And then adding espresso shots is another easy way to do it.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of, like, she'll take her regular, you know, caramel mocha and do it with caramel or with two extra shots or three extra shots, so it'll be five or six shots in the mocha, and then it'll be almond milk, and yeah, she can get it like $9 pretty easy.
Wow.
So yeah, and then every once in a while I have that moment where like I think about what I spent on coffee that morning, and I'm like, oh man, the things I could have done with that, you know. If $10 bucks a day at Starbucks, it's $300 a month. Like I could be driving a newer truck.
So. Most likely, yes.
But they'd kick you out of Seattle.
No. Okay. So here's the funny thing. Here's the hilarious thing about Seattle. Seattle is made up of environmentalists who all drive Toyota Tacomas or Ford F-150s. Like, we have a lot of Priuses, but they're nobody's primary car.
Well, yeah, because it's can't be.
Yeah. I'm starting to see a lot more Teslas, but that's only when you get like by the Microsoft campus or deep into actual Seattle. So,
wow.
How is the gun culture there?
So it's me and Baron and it's a couple of us and we all
I can picture the gun shows there. It's like two guys wandering around.
No. See, we all show up there. So, I mean, like, there's a bunch of people there, but then you go to the next gun show that's, you know, 60 miles away, and it's the same people. So,
didn't Microsoft used to have a gun club?
I think they did. Maybe, possibly, but well before I moved up here. I don't know. Microsoft, you know, so here's the weird thing. Like, Microsoft and Amazon and the other, you know, the other big tech companies that work up here, they sort of like operate in their own world. Like, so there's, if you work for Amazon and you work on campus, you could have your entire life and never like really leave the Amazon campus. You'll go to the coffee shop that's on there, and you know, you'll play on the Amazon softball team and this and that. Like, they're really big on like owning the whole employee. And like, they don't have apartments on campus, but I'm sure they've considered it.
But do they do the bus thing where it's like the company bus that comes around and picks people up, or is that just a San Francisco thing?
So that's more San Francisco. But what they do have is, because our public transportation is good but not great, Microsoft especially is famous for this. Microsoft will run a shuttle bus like from their campus to a commuter train station. Yeah. So you never have to go on a city bus with, you know, regular folks. You just take the commuter train into Seattle, and then you get on a shuttle bus to the actual campus.
Wow.
But yeah, it's not quite Silicon Valley, but like, we keep trying. So and this week Amazon was in the news because Amazon was going to build yet another giant skyscraper in downtown Seattle, and stopped their plans mid. They were about to break ground, and then they said, because there's a couple Seattle council folks who really hate Amazon, and developed a new per employee tax that was going to be basically only focused at Amazon. So Amazon said, well, we don't want to build our new skyscraper here. And then that was yesterday, and today they're already talking about at least reshaping the tax.
You know, it's funny. It's funny. Every time liberals want to pass a tax, they assume that nothing will change after the tax is implemented.
Yeah.
So they go, oh, yes, we have, you know, the economy is in this state and people make this much money and we have this many employees. So we're going to implement a tax to raise revenue. And they don't ever consider the idea that the minute that tax goes into place, people are going to change.
Yeah.
What they do. You know, yep. It's just mind boggling. And then the tax never, you know, raises as much money as they expect. And, you know, it's that, you know, that the, you know, socialist death spiral, you know, crazy.
Well, I mentioned that I grew up in Portland, or outside of Portland, and Oregon is one of a limited number of states that has no sales tax. They have a rather high state payroll tax, but no sales tax. And for the entire time that I remember growing up, the Safeway grocery store that is just, you know, 500 yards inside Oregon was the largest Philip Morris distributor in the U.S. because everybody from Washington would drive down and, you know, like, all right, here, I'm just getting my two cartons of cigarettes now and turn around and go back over the bridge. And that Safeway is going out of business now. I just, as when I was down there, and I'm like, how did they screw that up? Like,
no kidding. How is that?
They're literally just, you know, selling an addictive substance, and they somehow screwed it up. So
I wonder if the cops are sitting across the.
No, because they've got all these, like, they even post like how many cartons you're allowed to take, and because the flip side of it was up here in Washington, we can buy like real fireworks. And Oregon was pretty restrictive on that. So everybody would drive up into Vancouver and buy actual legit fireworks and then, you know, trundle them across the state. And that kind of disappeared because now everybody just drives out to the Indian reservations and buys real fireworks and M80s and everything.
Nice.
And you can buy them all year round. You don't have to wait for July.
Yeah, it's funny how people find a way to get around stupid laws.
Yeah, it's as if people were going to do what they're going to do, whether or not the government wants them to do it.
Right. It's also, you know, it's also it's also interesting. You can tell a difference between the laws that are, and there's a legal term for this that the lawyers know, and I can't remember what it is, but it's laws that are really bad and laws that are just like administrative bullshit. For instance, oh, yeah. You know, it's, you know, murder. It's illegal to murder people, and it's, you know, stuff like that that everybody agrees is bad, except for the crazy people that do it. And normal people don't do that. But when it comes to driving, you know, 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, or crossing the border to get a pack of cigarettes cheaper, or, you know, crossing the border to get some booze cheaper or something like that, everybody does it.
So my thought on that, and I'm certainly not like unique in this thought, is that nobody ever gets, using the driving analogy, nobody ever gets pulled over for that. It's just what you end up getting convicted of, right? So the cop pulls you over because you're an asshole doing something.
Right.
And then decides that, oh, you were coming from Vancouver and have the illegal fireworks.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, you got to be being a blatant jackass or something.
The phrase we always used in college is you can get away with one crime at a time.
Well, that's probably accurate. Well, you hear about that with criminals all the time. Is they, you know, they, you know, for instance, they're like, you know, I've watched some of these. Brita got me watching some of these jailhouse criminal shows.
They're all good.
Well, they are good. They're, and the reason I watch them is because I work with the public a lot.
Oh, and yeah.
The jail stuff is fascinating in sort of like a psychological what to look for kind of way. Like, you know, today as I was leaving work today, I had one, he was a classic case, and I would have not been surprised had he been in prison, because he was loud and he talked a lot and he had a bunch of tattoos and he didn't have his fixed address and he was like making excuses for everything, and it was classic prison behavior.
Yeah.
And, you know, in any other circumstance, if I had watched those shows, I probably would have been like, oh, here's this weird guy. Oh, ha, 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 you know, but yeah, definitely.
Yep. Speaking of TV, just real quick, I want to thank and both thank and scold Brita, because Brita reminded on a previous Squirrel Report episode. You reminded me that I needed to watch Santa Clarita Diet because the second season came back. But then you partially spoiled it.
Oh no, I'm so sorry.
Well, you let me know that not all of Nathan Fillion was in Santa Clarita. Ah, yeah. So parts of him. I was watching it with my wife, and I go, okay, I'm not going to tell you, but I do know that, you know, I know a spoiler, and then we got to a couple exciting things, and I go, oh, I didn't know about that, and then we got to Nathan Fillion, and I go, oh, that's the spoiler I knew about.
Yeah, he was. Are you watching anything else lately that is, like, on your list of things that you've really been liking lately?
So I watch, okay, basically if it's on Netflix,
okay,
and it takes place in Alaska, I watch it.
What? Like what?
So I watched the I watch all of the Alaskan State Troopers.
Troopers, stuff. We watch like those too. The Alaskan State Troopers with all the, everybody is drunk in Alaska apparently. Yep.
But what I enjoy far more than that is the, there's two different ones. There's one called, now I can't think what it's called. I don't know, but there's two different shows and they're almost identical shows. And they're the tow truck drivers that rescue semis, both in Alaska and, in essentially Canada, in the same areas and these remote areas of Canada. And they flip these semis and stuff like that.
It's like the ice truckers or
sort of. Yeah. Yeah. Something. But this is like all from the tow truck side. And it's just, I mean, you see these guys and on one part of it, it makes you want to like become a tow truck driver. And the other part of you goes, well, I'm never doing that. That's for damn sure.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I also like watching the Alaskan real estate shows, where these people will hike out, you know, and take a look at these cabins, these remote cabins and stuff. And I'll see what I feel is a pretty remote cabin that, you know, has no power and no water and things like that. And it's funny because it's always the wife that says, this isn't quite remote enough. We wanted something with you know, no running water. And this one at least has a creek nearby.
Why?
And you see the husband go, yeah, I'm the one that has to hike out and pull the well up or whatever. You know? So there's always like a level of civility and generally you can tell who's going to be stoking the fireplace at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my God.
And who's not. You know, but every once in a while, I mean, there's some cool places. I watch a lot of like the House Hunters and stuff like that because I like to remind myself just how absurd, Seattle specifically and Washington in general real estate is and how if I moved anywhere else, I could, you know, buy a castle for what I paid for a 3-bedroom.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure if I moved to, like, you know, Nevada, I could own a county. Because I used to work in Nevada, and I was like, oh, if I could only buy a house down here.
And so, now, yeah.
And now I bought a house, and it's not in Nevada. Yeah.
But is the reason there's so much fascination with Alaska is because you're almost there anyway?
No, we are nowhere near there.
You're closer than I am.
Well, look, that's true. No, that's very true. No, you know what I think it is? Because it's everything I enjoyed as a youth as far as camping and backpacking and hunting and stuff like that. It's that as a lifestyle. And honestly, like, and I'll exempt the city of Anchorage because they're just another big city, but there's kind of no wussies that live in Alaska. Like, there's no wimps up there. Everybody is, well, okay, half of them are running from something. Or drunk. Probably both.
According to the Alaska State Troopers, everybody in Alaska is drunk. Yeah.
But it's like here in Washington, and honestly, it's partially what keeps me employed. Here in Washington, we have a huge homeless population, and I 100% believe that it's because we don't have winter.
Oh. What?
Right. So we don't.
You don't have winter?
I mean, like 45 degrees and maybe we get like one day of snow a year.
No, you don't have winter.
Yeah, it's that Pacific
effect. We have wet. I mean, we get rain and we get wet, but we don't get snow.
The other side of the mountains gets cold.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The other side of the mountains, they have real seasons. But like I mentioned earlier that I turned my air conditioning on today because it's hot out. And that hot is 78 degrees. So, I mean, it's not Texas hot, and it's not Cleveland in July hot.
Right. Know?
But it's like we'll have a week over 100 degrees, and we'll have a week under 30 degrees, and the rest of the time we live in the 60s.
And get rain.
We get a lot of rain. And if you're thinking of moving to Seattle, I'll tell you that we get even more rain because we're full. We don't want anybody else moving here. We're full.
No more people.
No, we're all full.
Seattle is not even close to being a place I would consider moving to.
Good, because we're full. There's no room in the inn.
There's no brisket.
Yeah, there's that's brisket. A problem. It's in my backyard. Oh. There's no commercial brisket, okay?
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah. But I did make my own bacon from pork belly this recently.
Ooh, tell nice. Me about that. I would love to know about this.
So for Christmas, my wife bought me a thing called a man crate.
Okay.
And basically what it was a, it broke down to, it was a box, and inside that box was another box, and blah, blah, blah. And when you got all the way down to it, it was a brick of cement. And you broke open this cement, like I took a hammer to it, and inside that cement was
very manly. Yes. Yes.
And, mm-hmm. and inside that cement was a gift card. And then you use that gift card to go on the website and buy, you know, you could either buy like a, they had some tools like an axe and a machete and whatever. But then they also had like these kits, and I got this make your own bacon kit. And it was really awesome because it came with all the seasonings and all the instructions, and it told you to start with like a 4-pound pork belly. So I went to my butcher, which actually for us was just our grocery store because they had it there too.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And I told the meat guy what I was doing, and he said, yeah, this is roughly what you want. And we actually bought about a 10-pound pork belly because my wife wanted half of it to sous vide. So we sous vide half, and then we turned the other half into bacon. And you vacuum, or well, we vacuum seal it, but you could do it in a Ziploc bag with all the seasonings, and you basically like sort of let it brine for 10 days. Hmm. And then after that, we pulled it out, and it came with one of those foil bags, like, so you could smoke in your oven.
Okay.
But on the instructions, it says, if you have a smoker, or if you know somebody with a smoker, or if you have neighbors who have a smoker, go steal their smoker and do this in a smoker instead. So I have two smokers. So I put the bacon in the smoker, and it was delicious. It was very, very, very good bacon.
So you smoke, you did the whole brining thing, and then you smoked yep. it in your smoker.
I did.
And then you fried it like bacon, like regular?
Yeah, so at that point it's still a whole pork belly, and then I mm-hmm. sliced it into, you know, strips of bacon. And just fry it like regular bacon at that point. And the only mistake that I made is it tells you to sort of rinse it off when you pull it out of the brine.
Okay.
And I did not do an excellent job. I just sort of wiped it off.
Oh, okay.
So there were parts of it, like it had a crust, which was really nice, but it was a little, there was a lot of salt hanging around and stuff like that, that I probably could have just let go. So yeah, it was really good. I will definitely do it again. And in fact, I think I'm going to cheat, and there's a number of really good, like, make your own, you know, brine recipe, so I don't have to buy another package, you know.
So what kind of smoker do you have? Do you have one of those smokers where you have to watch it and feed it?
So I have, I started out with a regular charcoal, I started out with a charcoal smoker, round smoker, single rack, you know, charcoal on the bottom.
Right.
And that was nice, and it was a great way to start, and I still use it for things that I don't want to put in my regular smoker. But now I have an electric smoker.
Me too.
And it has 7 racks.
Wow. And 7.
I stack that thing full every time I get a chance.
Nice.
And it's nice because it has a remote, mm-hmm. and the remote tells me, you know, what temperature it's at. And then also the remote also has a button to tell me like what the meat probe is at, so I can tell the internal temperature of the meat. And it has, wow. It has a couple other features. Like it has a light on it for, you know, if you're go out and, in the dark and stuff like that. And
right.
when we moved into our new house, when we bought our house, the first project my wife and I did together was we built a smoker hut. So the smoker fit nicely in that. And this way I never have to put like the plastic cover on the smoker, and it keeps the rain mm-hmm. off it. And we just built a little, basically a little shed with open sides, you know, around this. So you're not, you know, risk of fire type thing.
Nice.
And it's really perfect.
Man.
So.
That is quite a setup.
But yeah, I every holiday I definitely smoke something, and I try and smoke, mm-hmm. you know, just for at least like 1 or 2 dinners a month, you know, even if it's just a pork roast or something like that.
We always, well, not always, but for a few years we decided for Thanksgiving we would smoke the turkey.
Okay.
And
turkey's like my least favorite thing to smoke.
I don't like turkey just generally. Like I eat turkey literally once a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's enough for me. But, sure. you know, it's Thanksgiving, you have to have turkey, whatever. So I brine my turkey, and I do, like, an apple juice brine.
Uh-huh.
And then the morning of Thanksgiving, Mike and I would butter up the turkey, because you slather butter on the outside. And then, well, you rinse it off first. You rinse the brine yep. off, and then butter it. And then we would be dragging that turkey out like at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. And then there was one year, and it was a couple of years ago, that it was so cold on Thanksgiving that the turkey would not cook. It wouldn't come up to
temperature. Yeah.
We couldn't get it up to the temperature to cook. And so we ended up finishing it in the oven, and it was just, so we don't do it anymore, because it's, you know, the weather situation. Yeah. And I guess you don't have that, right? You
no,
don't have that.
The only thing that I'll get is like when I smoke in the fall or the winter,
mm-hmm.
I always end up doing longer time because like the wind, you know,
right.
it'll be windy and rainy, and it's sort of always cooling the outside of my smoker
right.
and not mm-hmm. really trapping heat in.
Yeah.
But the reason I don't really smoke turkey anymore is because when I smoke turkey, the skin always gets very rubbery.
Okay.
And I don't really like that texture, so mm-hmm. I'd rather just do my turkey in the oven. And lately, the last, like, probably 3 Thanksgivings, we've just done brisket for Thanksgiving instead, and nobody complains.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean,
well, who would complain?
Well, you know, my thought is here, and maybe this is being judgmental, but if I invite you over for Thanksgiving and I smoke brisket and you complain, the problem is you, not me.
Yes.
I mean, right? Like,
yeah, yeah. If you complain about brisket at any point,
yeah,
you've got a problem. Yeah.
My wife and her cousin, they had a rather vehement disagreement because my wife was literally appalled when she watched her cousin put prime rib in the microwave. Like, I understand some people don't like their prime rib as rare as others, and
right.
I'm perfectly willing to put it on the flat top and sear it up for you a little bit if you wanted. But as we watched it go into the microwave,
oh no,
there were some murder stares. So,
well, with good reason.
Yes, yes.
That's beyond the pale. I mean, that's, you know, that's more than just, oh, your brisket is questionable. I mean, that's just wrong.
That's what I thought.
That would be, I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what to, I wouldn't know what to do in that kind of situation, because I would be just completely dumbfounded.
Yes.
I think at that point you kind of like, you give up your rights to prime rib.
That's, you know, that was my thought.
Yeah.
This is no longer
okay. Have this nice, you know, plate, we'll make of chicken sandwich. Nuggets.
Yeah. No.
Well, you know, for like, I don't know how you guys do your holidays, but like, I've definitely done the holidays where you have like 15 or 20 people over, and you'll make like the proper adult dinner, and then you'll make like some hot dogs or something for the kids, you know? And like, we've done this for 4th of July picnics where we've had like brisket and stuff like that. And then we'll have a sure. couple of hot dogs if kids don't want it. My thought is, at any point, you know, a guest could be moved to the kids' diet. if you're not worthy of the prime rib or the brisket, like
you get a hot dog.
we are not above removing your brisket card. You know,
I went on a date one time, and it was like just kind of like a first date, kind of, hey, let's go out to dinner. Like,
yeah,
you know, it was like one of those things, and we didn't really know each other that well, and okay, we'll just go out and get dinner, and he got, oh God. He got himself a steak. He ordered a steak, and it wasn't like a fancy restaurant or anything. It was kind of like a TGI Fridays kind of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Place. And he ordered the steak well done.
Oh no.
See, that date over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it was nice to meet you. You know.
You know, I will openly admit that when the election, the 2016 election was happening, right?
Uh-huh.
I had, and it came out
that
Trump orders his steak, you know, well done.
Yeah.
I was willing to let go, you know, possible securities fraud. I was willing to let a lot go. I understood that he was, you know, he was in construction in New York, so he probably had some shady mob connections, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I had pause. I go, wait a minute. This man eats at some of the finest restaurants in New York.
Yeah.
And he's ordering them to burn his steak.
Yeah.
You know, it put some pause in my heart. And then I looked on the other side of the ballot and I realized who was sitting there. And I go, well, okay, fine.
Yeah, it was an issue for me too. I'm like, man, like, do I really want this type of person leading the country? Well done steak. But, you know, I just figure... And wait a minute, didn't Trump sell steak for a while?
Trump steaks,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's weird, but
I guess, you know,
I just kind of look at Donald Trump like, I think he might be like slightly, I don't want to say autistic, but like, okay, eccentric.
Yeah.
I think he's possibly secretly a really introverted guy who has learned how to fake being extroverted in the attempts to be like not only famous but rich, because he understands like how important it is to be rich. But I think he's like deeply eccentric.
So I have a friend that works in like the movie industry in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And he's described a couple of very big name actors as they wake up every morning and they ask themselves, what would a human do today?
Uh-huh. Yes.
And
wow.
Because they have no guidance on what to do. And they just ask, what is the normal thing to do?
Yes.
And I think that Trump has some of that. Like,
I agree.
He acts as, what am I supposed to do as whatever his position at that time is. You know what I mean?
Well, when you're raised, you know, he was not by any means.
He did not come from, no.
He was not son of a peanut farmer.
No, he was not a self-made man. His dad was he grew up wealthy and had, went to private schools and all that kind of stuff. So he was raised in that environment that is completely divorced from the reality of, 99% of the rest of the population. So it may be that, he is a very successful chameleon.
Yes. And I think that I've only met two presidents in my life. And they've probably been two of my least favorite presidents. But hey, if I have the opportunity to meet a president, I'm going to meet a president, right? And the two presidents I met were Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
I actually
How did we not hear this story?
I don't know.
Okay. Go on.
So I got more interaction with Jimmy Carter than I did Obama because he was not obviously the president at the time because Jimmy Carter was president before I was born.
Right.
But and much before you were born too, Brita. Don't worry about that.
Yes.
So I was working in Nevada at the time, and I was working for the Nevada Republican Party. And Jimmy Carter's son, Jack Carter, was running for Senate down there because it was the least expensive place in the nation to run for Senate.
Okay.
And he figured out that he could move to Nevada and put, maybe $400,000 at most into a campaign and probably buy himself a Senate seat, right? And he had his dad at a lot of campaign stops. So because I was from out of state and none of the regular political folks knew me, a lot of my job was to, I volunteered in Jack Carter's office to figure out when rallies and when meetings were and things like that. Sort of
you were a spy.
Yeah, I mean, I called it black ops, but it wasn't really that high speed. It was just a volunteer, right? So the first thing that was struck to me about this campaign was all of the campaign signs for Jack Carter said elect Jay Carter to Senate. And I am to this day, I am convinced that it was a campaign strategy.
J as in Jay the initial?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
And to me, I believe with the number of geriatric voters in Nevada, there were old people who legitimately thought they were reelecting Jimmy Carter.
It's like that Eddie Murphy movie where he ran as Jeff Jefferson or whatever. He ran it with the same name as the guy that died in office or something.
Yeah. So I legitimately feel that was a calculated political strategy.
Oh, of course it was.
And then when I met Jack Carter, I realized that he had never met a real human being in his life who acted naturally around him. And then when I met Jimmy Carter, he was actually a really nice guy.
And
say what you want about whatever, and I'm sure he had some horrific policies and didn't understand monetary policy when he was in office, but Jimmy Carter still does at least show up for a photo shoot and swings a hammer for Habitat for Humanity, and I think that that's actually important to him. So to me, it's like he didn't have to ask what a human would do today. When I met Barack Obama, it was complete robot.
Really? Like,
he was the most charismatic robot I'd have ever met. If I were running a campaign and I were to say who I would want as a candidate, obviously being unknown, somebody like Barack Obama, he really could sell ice to Eskimos.
Clinton was the same way.
I'm sure. Oh, definitely. Right. Like,
yeah, he was just one of those people that was whatever it was, he had it. And people liked him, whether you liked his policies or not. That's why that's why Clinton was such and Obama to a certain extent was the same way. He was Oh, and by the way, Jimmy Carter did nominate Paul Volcker for the Fed chairman, so he knew something about monetary policy.
He knew better, right?
Or he listened to people that did. So,
well, yeah. You know, I suppose that's all you could ask.
Yeah, a little too little, too late, though.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, there've been several. You know, it's funny. There's you can tell the presidents that you know. I go through the list of presidents that are likable and the list of presidents that are not. Nixon always tops the one list of presidents that are not likable for whatever reason. You know, he just never. You know. The reason he lost against Kennedy in the 60 was, you know, he was not likable on TV even.
And, well, I mean, you had Nixon going up against Kennedy, and Kennedy was, oh, this handsome guy,
right, exactly,
so youthful and uh-huh. handsome, and played like and crazy. Nixon was not. Yeah. I mean, he was, you know, not was the it? Handsome guy, and.
Was it Nixon that famously looked at his watch during the debate and basically lost the debate? Was that Nixon Kennedy?
I don't think so. I know Nixon sweated on TV. That was
not. Yeah, yeah. There's a really famous story that gets talked about, and I thought it was Nixon, but maybe it wasn't. Where he looked at his watch on TV during debate, like he had.
Oh, that was,
you know, somewhere else. Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, that was that was Herbert Walker Bush with Clinton.
Oh, okay, okay, yeah.
Why was he looking at his watch?
Because to see what time it was.
Oh. Yes, but like because Clinton was going on and on, or what?
Probably.
Well, yeah, it was probably like, Jesus, how much longer is this going to go on? You know, like everybody does when they're checking their watch, right? I mean, that's why you do it. And I bet since then everybody's been like, don't wear a watch.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, you learn, right? But
oh yeah, yeah. You know, the one thing I miss about working in politics is the weird I don't wanna say like the weird things people do because that's what you do. You know, and the weird feelings people have about things of, oh, you know, if you go to Iowa, you have to go to this specific deli because that's the deli that everybody on a campaign trail goes to. Or if you do this, you have to make an appearance at, you know, such and such Toastmasters event because that's where everybody goes and people are looking for you there. Hmm. And it happened on the local level when I was working in politics, and it happens obviously on the national level, you know. So,
and then somebody like Trump comes along and says, I'm just gonna do what I
yeah want to do. You already know who I am. I'm just gonna show up and do what I want,
right?
It worked well, and I think it worked because people are sick of the routine that politicians have.
Oh yeah.
Well,
you know, they want something more real, and they want, you know, I don't know.
It's really interesting going back to living in Seattle. I think that if you were to walk around like Seattle proper, you know, actual the city of Seattle, you would be hard pressed to find someone who believes Trump is going to finish his first term.
Hmm.
Everybody is of the belief that either Stormy Daniels or the Mueller investigation or something else is going to end him, and every time there's a new little scandal, it goes, oh, here comes the impeachment proceedings. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
they realize that. I guess they don't realize there's not a chance in hell of that happening.
They really don't. They really don't. Right. And I legitimately worry. Like I didn't worry about this election. Like it's from a you know, sort of personal safety and security point of view, because I really feel that nobody expected Trump to win. And we were all a little bit surprised, like, oh, Lindsay, this could happen, right? So sort of like nobody was ready, right? But I legitimately feel that the city of Seattle may catch on fire if he is reelected. Like people are going to be besides themselves, and whatever they thought they did to, you know, save them, whatever, like it's a real concern of mine, you know, and I work with the public every day, and I work in a very public, I work with the unwashed masses, and, you know, so I sit in these little, in these conflict briefings, and we talk about like what is May Day going to look like this year and stuff. And, you know, like May Day, because we've had horrific May Days here in Seattle, they don't happen anymore because basically we know the plan, right? The Seattle police has literally a binder that they pull out and they say, this is how we do May Day. Hmm. You know, and we put 100 officers here and 20 officers there, and we shut down this light rail station, and we do that, and we just sort of press play, and everything happens. Hmm. And the real concern is, what if the other side or any part of that doesn't play by the script, you know? So,
well, the nice thing is, if there is a fire, it'll get put out real quick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, especially in November. good luck lighting it. You'll need magnesium.
That's okay. California will be burning.
There's so much talk, and I'm sure it's on the national news too, but there's so much talk up here about this, like the Three Californias initiative and this Cal Exit thing. And
I bet you there's a lot more talk up there, because there's almost none that I've heard anywhere. Other than, you know, cursory.
Yeah. I mean, like, maybe it's just by proximity. Yeah, but is. Like we hear all about it because everybody feels. And I mean, I felt this when I was down in Oregon, too. Everybody feels that, like, if California splits into two or five or however many states, that it's not going to stop there, that Oregon and Washington are going to want to split at the mountains. And
of course,
because Western Washington is nothing like Eastern Washington. You know what I mean? I mean, sure. to compare only things that events that we might all be aware of, like, you know, Eastern Washington is basically got far more in common with Idaho than Western Washington.
Right.
And Eastern Washington would much rather the political climate of Idaho than they would of Western Washington. And they really feel like Seattle is telling them how to live.
Which they are.
Yeah. Which, of course, they are. Absolutely. And the same thing happens down in Oregon with, you know, Portland tells farmers in Eastern Oregon how much water they can have for their crops. You know, so I feel that if California does split, which it very well might, that we're gonna jump from 50 states to 60 states very fast.
Well, yeah, think about the splits. You know, northern and southern Illinois.
Yeah. I mean, how long until Austin decides it doesn't want to be Texas?
Never.
Never?
No.
I just picture Austin saying, we're out. Happen. But I guess Austin would be landlocked, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, that's not
good. Yeah. Happen. Okay.
Plus they wouldn't have any money.
Well, yeah, that's true.
There aren't any oil wells in Austin.
I don't know. I just watched a documentary on this horizontal drilling.
They wouldn't give up. They wouldn't give up their tax base by going it alone. But you know, obviously, you know, California could split into three or four or five or whatever. And
yeah,
I don't see Utah splitting up, but Nevada sure could.
Oh yeah. The only thing that I wonder about, you know,
Colorado.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I wonder about California is California has a shit ton of military installations.
Yes, right? Those are federal installations. They wouldn't be unaffected.
No. I just wonder if they're going to get a lot of federal pushback.
Probably not.
You know, no. I mean, hey, if it happens while Trump is in office, he'll probably just sign on the dotted line and let them become their own country and kick them out.
I don't know that we'd want a hostile country that close to the continental U.S. We'd...
Hey, all you got to do is make a 90-degree turn in the wall.
Yeah.
he's already building the wall. Just turn it 90 degrees.
Just run it straight up along the Sierra Nevadas.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, that Colorado River is not happening anymore, Los Angeles.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
California becomes, as much of a tinderbox as it is now, it becomes a real big tinderbox if you shut off the water that they fight in.
Oh, yeah. They might have to install a few nuclear power plants to power the desalinators.
Yeah.
Heaven forbid. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I did hear that apparently there is, and I don't know enough about this, but I did hear that apparently there are pieces of the California infrastructure that are specifically wired to so they could plug in aircraft carriers from San Diego to power parts of California.
I thought they did that once.
Oh, they did do that once?
I thought I heard somewhere. Well, maybe.
I heard at least the infrastructure exists to park a couple of aircraft carriers off the coast, and you know, which are already there in San Diego, and power.
Well, like an iPhone charger, just
yes.
Plug it in.
There's gonna be. Back to the future.
Oh, you know what? I don't think they did it, but they were talking about it when California was having all the brownouts and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
They were talking about plugging the aircraft
carriers. Oh, my God.
In and like one of these, you know, just plugging it into the grid.
Sure.
Well,
way that would be a federal thing supporting the state of California, correct?
Well, it'd also be kind of stupid because you're not going to spend a multi-billion-dollar aircraft carrier parked outside of Los Angeles just so people can have the lights on. You know, we don't have that many carriers anyway.
All I know is up here, Burlington Northern Railway is offering a $25,000 hiring bonus.
I've heard that
for diesel electricians to. You know, because obviously locomotives are just big generators, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And all I can imagine is, you know, if the electricians union gets hired to wire a carrier to the California grid, I imagine you could probably retire off that project.
Well, also, you could do it. Just think about, you could just line up a fleet of locomotives and have them run their generators along the railroad track there.
There's there's like a 10-mile stretch of unused locomotives sitting in the desert because Burlington Northern it's not economical for them to run them, but they bought them when they were cheap.
Oh, so they just mothballed them.
Yeah, they mothballed it, and there's like a maintenance crew out there. I want to say they're somewhere in Utah.
Well, there you go.
I don't remember where they were.
Mobile power generation.
Yeah. So all they got to do is truck that down wherever they want.
Those are big generators, too.
Yeah. Yep.
Sounds like a plan. You should write that up. I bet you could sell it to somebody.
Yeah, and you know what? All the California environmentalists would love it when they find out that their city is being powered by diesel.
But what about the solar?
And not necessarily low sulfur eco-diesel either.
Oh, no. All right. Well, we are over an hour.
Yay!
And we didn't talk about our topics.
We didn't.
Yeah, no.
We didn't talk about anything we planned on. That's okay.
It was a great show, though.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank you all for the opportunity to be a invited guest, and I do apologize that I don't have the interesting employment stories that Matthew Allen has, and I've never written a book.
Oh, please.
But I will use this platform to merge those two, and one more vote in Matthew Allen needs to write the damn book.
He totally does.
And I keep trying to suggest titles for him, and I think the one title that he liked so far is Why I Can Never Go Back to Costa Rica.
I like that one too.
That's great. Yeah, that so. Would he should write. That would be an Amazon bestseller for sure.
Oh, in a heartbeat.
At least.
Yeah.
We'll get a Larry Correa book bomb on it, and he can retire.
There you go. All right. Well, thanks, MDev. It's great having you on. We'll do it again.
Well, and thank you.
Yes, please. You know, I don't. Does it require your wife to be out of town, or
no?
Okay,
she knows. She knows about the other podcast in my life.
Oh, okay.
And she's okay. She's okay with it. It just happened to work well that she was out of town, so I was able to take over her office and sit in her comfy office chair.
We will tell her nothing.
That's right.
She'll probably listen to this episode. Brita, she loves following you on Facebook.
Oh. Okay.
Between cooking things and being entertained, and she also works with the public, but she works with the public from behind a computer screen. Thankfully.
Oh, well, that's
so
lucky.
All the public
doesn't have to smell them.
No, she does not. She works from home, so the only smells she get come from me or the dog.
Oh,
okay.
That reminds
me. I'm sure that's enough on some days.
I saw a meme somebody posted on Facebook. Speaking of Facebook, talking about how it was summer and getting warm. So please, for God's sake, wear deodorant, people.
Yes, I think I had to share that today because, again, I work with the public and I work with the kind of public that smells in the winter.
Wash your butt, people.
Wow.
Wash your butt.
We have people that we have to kick off our train because we ask them to take a shower.
Damn.
Wow.
All right.
Well,
have a good
Thank
weekend,
you very
everyone.
Much.
And on that note,
we'll be back.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye. Good night.